Hello, and welcome to The Zesty Garden. I'm your host, Brian Earle, and in studio with me today is Kelly Cope. She is Utah State University's Extension Turf Grass and Water Conservation Specialist, and we'd love to take your questions or comments. The toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495, or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Kelly, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
And I think that's the first time I've actually said your entire title without goofing it up.
Well done.
So why don't you explain your title?
Well, it is an interesting title, and I get a lot of questions about it because, at least in some folks' minds, turf grass or lawn grass, whatever you want to call it, doesn't necessarily mesh with water conservation. But I beg to differ on that. And it's just a really great combination of areas of work and expertise to address in a state like this where we have water issues.
And so how did you get into this? I don't know if I've ever asked you this. How does someone become a turf grass and water conservation specialist?
Well, my educational background is actually in soil science, hydrology, and turf grass science. And so I had a background that lent itself to turf grass work, which was a requirement of the position in my department here at USU. And when I was hired, we were actually in a pretty severe drought. This would be 2001, 2003. And so they wanted somebody who could address the needs for the turf grass questions and work, but also address the needs we had for water conservation. And like I said, in my opinion, those things go really well hand in hand.
So is this a unique position to Utah State, or are there similar positions like this at other universities?
Well, there are folks like me who work on turf grass in every state. They're, you know, at the land-grant universities in every state. So here we've got Utah State as a land-grant university. Other states, I grew up in Texas, so Texas A&M would be the equivalent, and there are folks who work on turf grass. And then we all have our various areas of specialization. Mine happens to be water conservation and turf water use. Other folks work on turf diseases or insect pests or just general management. So yes, there are folks like me who maybe take a little bit of a different approach, but there are others, certainly.
So are you limited to just turf grass, or do you look at water conservation in other areas as well?
I do look at water conservation a little bit more broadly than just turf. I do a lot with landscape plant water use. So I'm talking about ornamental landscape plants. So, you know, the shrubs and the trees and the perennial and annual flowers, things like that. I do look at the landscape overall. And in particular, I look at irrigation efficiency related to how we manage those landscapes and how we irrigate those landscapes. Because in the state of Utah, as much as 3/4 of our per capita water use, and I'm talking on a municipal basis here, but as much as 3/4 of our water use is going to irrigate our ornamental landscapes. I mean, it's a stunning amount of water. So that's what I focus on.
What do you see or hope to see in the future 20 years from now? As far as what our landscapes look like?
You know, I'm a firm believer in folks having the style of landscape that they want. And I also am a firm believer that they can do that with plant material that perhaps requires less water. So still get the aesthetic that they want to have, but be using plant materials. And this includes turf grass, plant materials that are lower water using and lower maintenance in that regard with regard to their irrigation requirements. So I don't see our landscapes changing a great deal in terms of how they look, but I do see a shift in the plant materials that we're using.
So how is that going to take place when we've got some of the cheapest water on the planet?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, that, I believe, is going to be changing. We currently do have some of the cheapest water on the planet, but there are a lot of communities in the state who are looking at that, and some of the larger water projects in the state that are being proposed to bring more water to our population centers are going to require that changes be made to rate structures for water in the state. So I see water rates going up, perhaps not extremely and perhaps not in the very, very near term, but they will be going up. So that will certainly get folks' attention. And then, of course, the work we do here at USU, and not just myself, but I have several colleagues who also work on this topic area. You know, we're constantly going out working with industry, working with individual citizens, trying to get messages out there about things that people can do to save water in their landscapes.
Well, we can talk about some of those issues, but I wanted to make sure that we first got to talking about turf. That's
sure.
That's your specialty.
Sure.
What issues have you seen from this past winter? It seems like the vole populations popped back up again. I saw voles in my lawn. I've never had that before.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A little bit back toward the end of the garden. It's okay because I'm going to kill that grass off anyway. I've got to plant some more iris. And then a little bit of snow mold issues.
Yes. You know, snow this time of year, things are really warming up now. But I suspect a lot of folks in the state saw the snow melt and noticed some areas of their lawn that were damaged by snow mold. And that's very, very common, in the state. So they may be seeing some of that damage. The good news about that is that it's pretty easy for the grass to recover, you know, simply raking the area out. And then applying some nitrogen fertilizer and just sort of nursing it along will help it recover fairly quickly. The other thing that I've seen a little bit of in the state that's been a little bit different is some winter kill of some grasses. And this is more in highly managed golf course type scenarios, but I've seen a little bit more of that than I have in the past. So that's something that folks may be dealing with. And it's interesting, you know, you asked about colleagues across the country. This is something, you know, and folks probably heard about the polar vortex over the winter and things that were happening back east, you know, these crazy storms that kept coming and coming and coming. And turf grass across the country, frankly, has been pretty badly impacted by winter kill because of this bizarre winter we had.
So actually killing the entire plant.
Yes, actually killing it. And, you know, I think we've talked on the program before about turf grass. Turf grass is tough stuff, right? I mean, it's resilient. It tends to recover well. If you are trying to get rid of it, it can be very difficult to get rid of. So to have that kind of a weather condition that would actually kill the grass is pretty remarkable.
So was it killing all types of grass or mostly just like the warmer season grasses?
Well, certainly the warmer season grasses that aren't well adapted to those cold temperatures. And if you recall, those cold temperatures were getting, you know, Georgia, Florida, the southern states. So it was definitely affecting the warm season grasses in those areas. But it's also been affecting the cool season grasses in the more northern climates simply because of the amount of time that they had those extremely cold temperatures. And, you know, I have friends in Minnesota, for example, who've been getting snow right up to last week and probably aren't done just yet even. So it's pretty amazing.
Yes, my Minnesota friend was showing me a picture. It was from like 3 weeks ago, and they still had like 3 feet of snow on the ground. And I thought, okay, I'm really glad I'm in Utah this year.
Me too.
Well, if you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495, or send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. Kelly Cope is Utah State University's Extension Water Conservation and Turf Grass Specialist, and we'd love to have your questions or comments. I keep flipping that around, but at least I'm getting it all in there.
It's okay.
So as far as the vole issue, those little tunnels that people saw all throughout out their grass.
Yes. So that's another thing that we tend to see once the snow melts. And I personally have been the victim of vole damage on research plots. It's very, very concerning. And they're little tunnels. They're dug through the thatch layer of the turf. And unfortunately, what happens in those areas is the turf is actually killed. It's not going to recover in those tunnel areas. And so oftentimes there needs to be some filling in, perhaps with a little bit of soil, some overseeding, some special attention to fertilization and irrigation so that those areas can recover. But it's a tough recovery from vole damage. Now, the positive thing is that vole damage tends to be cyclical. So you mentioned to me that you had a little bit in your yard this year, but you'd never had it before.
Right.
And that's typical. So I have also experienced some vole damage on research plots, but that was one time and it was many years ago and I haven't had it since. So that's the good news.
So how do you rectify this next year? I'm thinking the first thing that we all should do is mow really low, because if you've got higher grass that's just kind of matted down, that probably provides more shelter for the voles.
And food, yes. And so that is one thing that can be done. But as I said, it is very cyclical. And my personal approach, I'm not sure if I should admit this on the air, but I basically keep my fingers crossed every winter and hope for a snow cover that's not super heavy, because that's the other thing that can sometimes give them a little bit more time and shelter to do their damage and dig their tunnels. So if that can be avoided, which of course, it can't always, then it's helpful too.
You're popular. I have three questions already. So we have from Washington County, we have Betty. Hi, Betty. How can we help?
Good morning. This is not about bowls, although I think I have them. But we're trying to get some sort of ground cover started. We have had a piece, I don't know what else to call it, a piece of lemon thyme that has just gone bonkers and winters really well. I'm not in southern Washington County, I'm in northern Washington County, so we get cold and we get snow. We got a lot of freezing this last year. Mm-hmm. But I wondered if creeping thyme would work in our area.
Creeping thyme should work in your area, and honestly, it's one of my very, very favorite plants in the landscape. I think it's just, first of all, it's tough as nails, and second of all, you can, depending on the variety you get, there can just be some amazing flower colors and some different textures, and so I think it's a great option for you.
Can you walk on it?
Yes, you can. You can. In fact,
All right. Yeah,
it's very often planted in between flagstones and pavers and things like that. Because
okay.
It does, yeah, it does withstand foot traffic really, really well.
Well, that's great. Well,
yes.
We're going to have a drip system in this one area, so I think it'll probably get enough water from that.
Well,
and thank you very much. We're going to go for it.
You're very welcome.
Thanks,
good
Betty.
Luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Our next caller is Carol from Logan. Hi, Carol. How can we help?
Hi. This is a kind of an unusual question maybe, but what's an effective and water-efficient way to prevent urine burn on your lawn when you have a female dog?
Oh, boy. Okay, I get this question quite a bit. And, you know, the thing about dog urine is that, you know, on the one hand, it actually contains some fertilizer. You know, it's got urea in there, and the turf grass actually likes that a lot. So you might have noticed sort of around the damaged areas, there are some nice bright green areas.
Yes.
Yes, and that's the reason, is that there's actually
okay.
some fertilization happening. Unfortunately, what happens in the center of those damaged areas is that it's so, so concentrated. It's actually burning the turf.
Okay.
You know, unfortunately, there's not a super easy solution. You know, training your dog, and by the way, I am a dog owner and lover, but training your dog to go in one area is sort of the ideal option. Otherwise, you know, you're looking at maybe following them around and sort of rinsing the area, because you
okay.
really need to move that material further down past the leaves, because the leaves are being burned.
So it's not...
Would that be just a sprinkle? I know that's not very water efficient, but you can just then take your hose and just kind of every morning and
yeah.
evening kind of sprinkle down.
Yeah, and
okay.
you know, if you do that, I can hear that you're concerned about water. But, you know, if you're following them around and really spot treating or spot applying the water, to me that's a worthwhile use.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Carol.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So really what's happening I'm hearing is it's not that it's burning the entire plant. It's just burning the leaves themselves, because
right.
you get the sun comes out and it just scorches the leaves because of the chemical composition of the urine.
Well, there's a lot of salt there, essentially. And so it's exactly the same thing that happens. Now, Brian, I know you've never done this, but anyone out there who's ever spilled some fertilizer on the lawn, and I will confess that I have done this, you'll notice there's this burn, and it's the concentrated salts in the fertilizer. And so that's exactly what's happening with dog urine.
Okay. So
yeah.
just water it in.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes it's not super practical to be out there following your dog around. And I understand that, too. I mean, my personal approach is, well, you know, it's not
especially
the worst
if
thing ever.
Looking your face at 5:30 in the morning and wanting
right,
to go out. So.
Right, right.
Okay. And we have an email question from Steve in Beaver Dam, Arizona. He said, I recently heard that Utah is the second most arid state in the nation. This surprised me, as I would have thought that Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico were all drier. So I Googled it, but could not find a definitive answer. The
mm-hmm.
best I could find was confirmation that Utah is indeed second driest in the summer months. But what about overall?
Okay, so that ranking, and by the way, it's true, we are second driest, is that, sorry, got a little bit of confusion there. The reason that we're ranked that way has to do with our overall precipitation amounts and average precipitation amounts. And so Nevada would be number one, Utah is number two, and frankly, I'm not sure about the rankings beyond that.
Okay, so it's overall, generally, Utah receives the second least amount of water.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And, you know, it's really considering the entire year. So the precipitation amount that we get during the entire year.
Okay. We have just about 5-6 minutes left. If you'd like to get in a question or comment, Kelly Cope, Utah State University's Extension Turf Grass and Water Conservation Specialist, is in studio with us. And our toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. Or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So let's talk about fertilization issues this spring. What can someone do with their turf grass to help it weather through the heat of the summer?
Well, this time of year, and particularly in northern Utah, this is a great time of the year to be applying spring fertilization. And my recommendation on that is to apply 1 pound of elemental nitrogen per 1,000 square feet of turf at this time of the year.
So what would you consider elemental nitrogen?
Well, what I mean by that is if you buy a bag of fertilizer, it's not going to be 100% nitrogen.
Right.
There will be a percentage of nitrogen on the bag. And if you've ever looked at a fertilizer bag, you've got three numbers across the top typically. They're representing first the percentage of nitrogen, next the percentage of phosphorus, and finally the percentage of potassium. But my recommendations with turf are really focused on nitrogen because our soils in Utah tend to be pretty adequate in terms of phosphorus and potassium supplying ability for the grass's purposes. And so, again, that recommendation right now would be to apply a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. And then, you know, we're pretty good usually through the rest of the growing season until late summer.
So a slow-release nitrogen?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up because this time of the year you definitely would want to use a slow-release form of nitrogen. And it should say something like that on the bag. It should say gradual release, slow release. It might say
encapsulated
or coated. It's going to have language like that that will indicate that that nitrogen will be available slowly over time, which is what you want. That's what you want for grass at this time of the year. If, on the other hand, you were to put out a form that's not slow release, that is quick release, what will happen is the grass plant will take that up. It will put on a whole lot of top growth at this time of the year, meaning leaves, and it kind of does so at the expense of the roots. So by using a slow release form, you're encouraging both root and shoot development.
And you want that root development you hit the summer and if you've got short roots, you've going to have to water it a ton.
Right, and that should really be a focus right now is encouraging healthy, dense, deeply growing roots because it's
the soil still has moisture.
Exactly. It's exactly as you described. The better your root system is, the more capable it is of accessing moisture deeper in the soil. So that should be an absolute goal right now.
And as far as watering, and I know I see sprinklers coming on, and in some places here on campus, I'm seeing dry grass already. I thought, how is that possible?
Yeah, we've had some kind of funky weather, though. I mean, we've been a little warm. Right now, we're quite cool, and we're expecting we had some rain Thursday. Yes, no, wait, sorry.
I got a half an inch that was in my rain bucket yesterday morning.
Okay, so we've had some rain and we're expecting more Saturday, and that's statewide. And so we've had a little bit of an unusual erratic condition this spring. And so, yes, some of it started to dry out. But really, I'm always encouraging folks to hold off on that first watering as long as they can so that you can encourage deeper rooting and, frankly, save water.
And you've said before, it's okay if you see your lawn kind of just browning a little bit because turf grass and even Kentucky bluegrass is very tolerant of
well, it enters dormancy.
Oh, there we go, dormancy. Yeah. And it'll come right back out of it as well.
That's right.
It just doesn't look that great, but if you're just talking about a couple of days.
Well, true, and that's something that occurs more in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
It's really a temperature response, but you're absolutely correct. I mean, that dormant period that our grasses sometimes enter into is absolutely normal. And as you said, when things cool down and moisture is a little bit more available, then they recover very, very well. So I'm always trying to encourage folks not to panic. This is, we're talking July here, because that dormancy is absolutely normal.
So just turn the water off outside as far as watering the grass right now. Unless,
right
of course,
now,
you're in St. George.
Right. That's a different story.
Yeah, you've got some other issues.
That's a different story. And even as you travel further south in the state, you know, right now in Logan, we're okay. I suspect within the next couple of weeks or so, though, people are going to start needing to water. Probably in Salt Lake, they're looking at that a little bit sooner. St. George, I suspect they're already irrigating. But then again, there are other parts of the state, Park City area, for example, where lawns are absolutely still dormant right now. So, you know, we have such a range of conditions across the state. But again, my general recommendation is to hold off on that first irrigation as long as possible.
I will say that because I'm a hose dragger and don't tend to water the lawn as much, but I water it more deeply when I do, I can usually get through at least the third week of May. And my goal is always to try to get to June without turning on my outside, without watering the lawn outside.
Well, good for you, Brian.
So, and I think it's because I fertilize when I'm supposed to, and I've got longer roots that are like, well, he's not going to water me, so I'm just going to have to go
I'm
into
just
the soil
get down there.
And find it. So
exactly.
It works.
Exactly. And, you know, if you can do that, that's terrific. And a lot of it's going to depend on what we see in terms of weather, right, over the next month
really
or
does.
So. You know, we have had some years recently that were extremely cool and wet in the spring, and we've had other years that got warm really, really early. You know, this year, frankly, I wasn't sure what to expect. It's been erratic. So it really is going to depend on your local weather conditions.
And I think I'm a little more tolerant of my lawn looking a little more dormant in a couple of places, especially if I know what is coming up in the weather. Oh, well, it's going to rain in a couple of days.
Right. So and that's really important for folks to keep an eye on. Like I said, we are expecting rain across the state Saturday. And so, you know, if you had been thinking about turning on your irrigation, maybe hold off. Take advantage of that natural precipitation.
Kelly, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Brian.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Kelly Cope is Utah State University's water conservation and turf grass specialist, and we'll have her in again. Coming up next is Brent Black, and we're going to talk about brambles and grapes. So stay with us.